Hello and welcome to the Musicians Map podcast. My name is Kane Power. Today we're going back to basics and talking about the hard stuff. The nuts and bolts of being a musician. Practice and lessons. This episode is all about learning your instrument, practicing and building your skill. We're going to go over the best ways to practice, including my 11 tips for easier practice. We'll talk about something called micro practice, and we're going to discuss the pros and cons of online learning. Also, I've got a free download to help get you on the right track and making progress, so listen out for that at the end. Welcome to a rainy Telpo. Hopefully the rain doesn't get too bad. You can probably hear it at times through the microphone, but we'll push on. So let me introduce my guest for today. She's been a pianist for more than 25 years. She's sat her piano exams and has a degree in music. She's played in bands, touring and recording as a pianist and singer in New Zealand and the United Kingdom. She has an incredible online piano course called Piano Picnic, and she just so happens to be my lovely wife. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, Ruth Power.
Hello.
Welcome, Ruth.
Yeah. Oh, it's nice to hear one of those intros on me.
Yeah.
For a change. I'm doing them on other people.
Well, welcome to the podcast. Very nice. So this week, we are going to combine our expertise, and we're going to talk about learning, and we're going to talk about practicing, mm-hmm. And a few other things like technique and tons of stuff to do with general, learning your instrument.
General bands.
Bands. Mm. Classic bands. So let's start with learning. I am a drummer and you are obviously a pianist.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the instruments we've chosen to spend most of our lives with.
Yeah.
So I want to begin by discussing how to make learning the instrument easier and more enjoyable. And I want to suggest that the first step is forming a relationship with your instrument and learning to love it.
Yeah.
As in, it has to become a part of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's super important because I am trying to imagine how you could actually get through learning an instrument, any sort of above beginner, like, you know, not anything more than a recorder or a triangle, anything more complicated. I think trying to picture learning everything that there is to learn, and particularly when you're a beginner, there's so much stuff, like technical stuff, to get through.
Mm.
Before you see a whole lot of reward without having some sort of passion for it or having, as you say, develop a relationship with it. Mm. And by relationship, you don't mean like you're not sitting in a room alone with your instrument, like stroking it and telling it your problems.
Well, but I don't know.
Maybe you are. You do. But a relationship as in, you know, something that you're devoted to, something that you kind of put, you invest time and emotion into, and hopefully, and you get the reward of skill and a bit of emotion back from it if it's an instrument that you admire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do we go about forming a relationship? To start with, people that are listening are going, okay, great, but
sounds weird.
How am I forming a relationship? How does it become a part of you, basically? How do you get your instrument to become a part of your life?
That noise, by the way, is dogs. I'm not making people who are listening and not watching. That slobbering noise are two dogs.
Both of them.
Ruth is very slobbery. Sorry, what was the question again?
How
do you develop a relationship with your instrument?
Yeah.
Well, first off, you would hopefully choose an instrument that you feel some sort of connection to, whether you feel some sort of natural disposition for, like, the technical movements that instrument requires,
mm-hmm.
or whether you just are in love with the sound that it makes. There's got to be some sort of connection to start with. I don't think you can form something when there is nothing there.
Okay.
I don't think that someone could go, you're going to learn the flute, just straight up, without you having any sort of passion.
So you've got a natural disposition.
Yeah.
You're attracted to the instrument in the first place. Something about it says something to you.
Yeah. And if you want to learn an instrument and you don't know which one is going to, you know, you don't have an idea already, then you need to try a bunch.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then from that point, you're listening to tons of music that features that instrument, and probably lots of different genres until you find something that you can properly obsess about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you get onto the piano? How did you choose that? And what about it?
Yeah.
Two-part question. And what about it attracted you?
Yeah. Attracted me, yeah, okay. I started because, I mean, I had nothing. I was just a kid, and I think the first hobby that I picked up was actually, jazz ballet or something, which didn't last for long. But I used to go to my sister's keyboard lessons with her, and I went to the same teacher to learn recorder. And it didn't take me long to figure out that recorder was a farce.
Sorry for all those recordists. Do we call a recorder player?
There's only so far you can go.
Yeah.
Right. And you're not listening to like some great post-rock recordings with a recorder in it. Maybe it's a new thing.
There's that guy that does it. The dude in Wellington that does recorder over all
those. Yeah, actually, I'm only like 2 degrees away from him. He's Lauren's friend, or Lauren.
He's great. Anyway.
Yeah. What's his name? We should put a link up.
Yeah.
He does a really good rendition of Titanic.
Link up there. Oh, I don't know where it goes.
Matt.
Yeah.
Mulholland?
Mulholland. Let's say it's Matt Mulholland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Recorder. It's great.
Brand new Matt.
Anyway, so, and then I was jealous of my sister learning the keyboard. And so I just interrupted and took over. And then my sister, bless Jess, she's ended up giving up because she didn't want to do the same thing as her little sister. And I kept going. And
so was it because Jess was doing it that it seemed cool? Or was there something else that made piano seem cool?
Oh, I had a friend that was also really good, who was a year or two in front of me, and she played for Elise. She used to play for Elise on her piano when I went to her house. And that was like the first song, as it is for so many people. That was literally the first song, kind of cool piano song that I heard, and was just like, this is fucking cool language. So she kind of taught me like the opening sort of riff. And then from there, I actually taught myself the first section, the main section that's recognizable. And then kind of realized that I enjoyed working it out.
Yep.
I think Mum used to play lots of ballet tapes when we were little. So I kind of, my first love was classical music, basically. Yep. That's what I was just like, that's insane.
Okay, so you were drawn to it for a number of reasons, and then you found that you maybe had a talent for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yep. And that was what kind of convinced Mum to pay for me to go there.
Yeah.
Years and years worth of lessons.
Okay. We're drifting a little bit. Let's go back to the relationship with your instrument.
Yeah.
And some ways to strengthen that for people that are listening that have chosen their instrument and maybe are faltering a bit in their practice or wondering about if it's the right instrument for them. One thing that I can say is what I did when I first got my first drum kit was find out everything that I could about all of the different parts that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I discovered the brand, I found out what the drum kit was made out of, the cymbals and where they came from, everything I could about the drums. And I think that can be important to connect with your instrument as well.
Yeah. When you actually know how it works.
Yeah.
And why. Yeah, the same thing with the piano. I mean, it's different to the drums in that you know, all the keys work the exact same way. Mm. You know, the mechanism for each key is the same. It's just, you know, makes it, it's longer or shorter, makes a different pitch. But, and so with the drums, you've got lots of different sort of types of drums to learn about.
Mm.
But I still think that if you have an acoustic piano, or even if you don't, it's worth learning about how the mechanism works. Mm. For your technique as well. So you know that when you hit it quickly, it means that the hammer's going on and off the string quickly. And
you know why it sounds that way.
And it works in your head, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And another way is I've found, and I know that you talk about this as well,
mm.
In your course, keeping your instrument in good condition, yeah. As in keeping it clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Really important. Yeah, I mean, because it's not, I mean, with pianos, I mean, you can clean them occasionally. And I do have a video on my YouTube channel about how to clean your piano, mm-hmm. without, because there's a bit of a danger. You can't just use, it's not, because it looks, the danger is that it looks like a piece of furniture that you might, you know, chuck some wood polish on.
Yeah.
You know, but it's actually a bit more complicated than that, because you start messing with the texture of the keys and then it's funny to play. But, you can put a cover on it just to keep it a bit cleaner and keep the dust off.
Yeah.
And then and then there's sort of a ceremony to it, because you take the cover off every time you want to play the piano,
mm.
and you lift up the lid, and it's kind of this sort of ceremony to preparing it to play.
Yeah.
And it feels a bit like, you know, there's a, I don't know, it's kind of a respect for it.
Yeah.
And mm. that's what will make you take it more seriously and commit to it and think of it as a more of a lifelong joy than just
something that has to be done.
Yeah.
And I mean, who wants to sit down at a dusty, sticky, you know, crappy instrument,
yeah.
and you know, that they just chucked in the corner of the room, you yeah. know, whether it's a horn or a stringed instrument or some drums or a yeah. piano that just sits there and accumulates dust. Who wants to play that?
Mm.
You know, no one's going to be enthusiastic about playing that kind of a thing. So mm. definitely keeping your instrument in top condition. And I think you said
it sounds better.
It always sounds better, but respecting it, show respect to it.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever named an instrument?
Never.
Never?
I've never named my pianos. I mean, I give them, you know, I talk about them and to them affectionately, I suppose.
Mm.
But no, I've never given that actually a person like a name.
Like an actual name.
Yeah. It might have helped if I had. Have you?
Nah. No, I've never named a drum kit. I usually just call it generic things when in the moment.
Hitty.
Hitty. The beast. or girl, you know, something like how you call your car.
Things. Yeah.
But apart from my name, my car's.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe give your instrument a name.
Well, maybe, I think just that could try help. It. Yeah. It might help.
Hey, call it Kane or something.
Fluffy.
Fluffy the saxophone. okay, let's move on into technique.
Yeah.
So we've made a connection with our instrument, hopefully, and we know that we want to keep at it, and we're starting to take it seriously. What we need to do is now, unfortunately, need to develop technique with our instrument, and that requires, you know, learning and practice. So I believe that some sort of lesson regiment will help you progress much quicker,
mm-hmm.
and with a more solid base, mm-hmm. than self-directed learning.
Mm-hmm.
I have experienced both sides.
Yeah.
And the regiment, thank you, Ari, with the snore, always produces more efficient results. Self-directed learning is great and it needs to happen, but I think actual lessons, especially when you're starting out, are effective.
Yeah, I mean, I think both are super important, because I don't think it's about kind of wanting to be a conscious musician, I think, is the word that I started using.
Mm.
Because I would never encourage that someone only used, you know, lessons or a course or a book or whatever, only learnt through that way, because some people don't do well with just structure. But I think a blend is really good. And so you kind of need to have the lessons to, because you do need to learn the theory, you do need to learn the technique. There's no way getting around that. And anyone that promises you otherwise is just selling you something. but you need also that time for the self-discovery and figuring things out in your head just by playing and having free time. So you can have both things simultaneously.
Yeah. I would second that you do need to learn the theory, and that people say that you don't. And I mean, you don't always need to know tons of theory.
Mm.
But even the, when I was first starting out, the small amount of drum notation that I learned and learned how to read drum music, even on a very, very basic level, it helped me so much, just figuring out pieces, you know. It's definitely a way to do it, but...
And theory is kind of, it's like a dirty word, really. It has a sort of bad connotation, but it's just understanding music, right? And so you can actually learn theory. It doesn't have to be necessarily linked to written music, although it's kind of easy to understand that way. But if you really just think of it as understanding music, then it's your doorway to everything, to writing songs, to learning songs by ear, to playing piano naturally, improvising, everything.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so how do we learn technique? Modern, in the modern world, we know that we used to go to teachers, and that's how I did it. I'm sure that's how you did it.
That's how I did it, yeah.
So, but these days, there's all kinds of things. So let's start with your area of expertise, online courses.
Online courses. Yeah, and the thing is, listeners might not know that for roughly maybe just less than a decade, I've been making books. Some videos as well, but I've mostly been involved in creating books that teach music, or books for exam syllabus or sheet music. That's been my job. So I've been a music editor for a bunch of years.
And
there's the classics that everyone recommends for piano, John Thompson and all that sort of thing. And they're classics for a reason, and they work to a certain extent, but they're so dry, and it's just text on a page. And I don't think there's any reason for anyone, unless you literally only can learn and respond to text on a page. But I think where technology has brought us now with online courses is that it's text, yes, so you've got that element of something you can read, but you've got video as well that shows you exactly what you're doing from different angles. And you've also, in the case of my courses, you've got a tutor, who's me, talking to you as well. So you've kind of got that teacher element.
Yeah.
All mixed in. So it's kind of the best of all worlds.
Yeah, and it's brought up to a modern context as well.
Yeah.
Rather than all this old-fashioned...
drills and...
Yeah, and some of it's important, but I mean, who wants to struggle through that? You know, especially these days, everyone's got short attention spans, and it's sort of finding time and using your technology. Who wants to struggle through something that was written in the 50s or 60s, you know?
I think, people hesitate to learn instruments these days because they just think of the old methods, and they think that they still think that that's the only way.
Yeah.
But there's this whole wide world of, you know, just as there's apps for everything else on your phone, you know, you can learn an instrument from a course, multimeter and that sort of thing on your phone as well.
Yeah.
On the go, when you want, in your pocket, all those sort of buzzwords, but it's true.
Yeah, it is true. if you are more text inclined, you also don't need to go out and buy a physical book with the rise of ebooks.
Yes.
So you can get them on... your tablet, or even on your computer, or on your Kindle. Lots of different ways to learn. What about YouTube as a method of online learning?
Yeah, okay. You know me, so you know that this is like a sore spot.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, encouraging discussion.
Yeah, no, it is. I love YouTube, and I obviously have a YouTube channel for Piano Picnic, and I do put videos up, and you put videos up as well. Because I think it's great. It's a free resource. You can, I think it's great for very specific things. If you know, if you want to just quickly brush up on what a C major chord is, you know, if you Google it, you get a YouTube video and it's like, da da da, and you're like, cool, done.
Yep.
But I think in terms of learning an instrument, it's such a long path, and it's such an easy path to, if you don't have the steps in place going toward your goals, then you're going to get lost along the way, lose motivation. And I think YouTube is just such a massive pool of so much noise. It's not generally not sending you on a specific learning path towards whatever your end goal is.
Yeah.
Because it's just individual videos, right? All splayed about. And also, I don't think it's a good learning environment because there's just so much stuff. And every video you watch, you've got this side panel of...
of other things.
Why don't you look at Saturday Night Live? And you get distracted. And it's just, I just don't... I don't think it's the way to learn an instrument.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair enough. I use YouTube all the time for many different things, whether it's video editing or things that I'm learning about. And it's good if you have a specific problem or something that you know. I need to find out what the Mixolydian scale is. And so you search that and there's probably a video for it.
Yeah.
But when should you be learning that? You know, it's, yeah, you're probably straying from the path. So what about modern in-person learning?
Yeah.
Is it still kind of valid?
I think it's relevant. I think it's relevant particularly for kids. Because I think maybe kids need and I think also parents probably prefer that for their kids because it's a time when they drop the kid off and the music teacher takes responsibility for the learning and keeps the kid in line and has, you know, special techniques for that. With online stuff, there's a certain amount of self-responsibility for your own learning.
Yep.
And I don't think that kids are capable of that on their own unless an adult is sitting there with them. So whether it's the parent or a teacher, whatever. But I think kids can still be using online methods in conjunction with, you know, for their homework, or if they want to learn a specific song, definitely go online for that.
Yeah.
But it can be really inconvenient for some people. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the way that I learned. And it was tough because, you know, I had to go after school a certain day of the week, every week, and it meant that I couldn't do things that time. And to be honest, while at school, you're kind of quite structured anyway, but I think as an adult, people have lives to live.
Yeah, exactly.
And they can't just commit that time every week and traveling to a teacher, and it's expensive.
Yeah.
Because it's one-on-one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so adults have a more of a capacity for self-learning as well. More kind of motivation, I suppose.
Yeah.
And discipline.
Discipline. And you've had time to actually, like we're talking about building a passion for the instrument, for the music. You've actually had time and experiences in your life that build that passion. Maybe you saw a pianist at a gig or whatever. So you've got stuff to draw upon for the journey. Whereas I think as a kid, you've got less of a sort of investment behind it.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So let's talk about the premier online course for learning, Piano Picnic.
Yeah. Piano Picnic.
What is it and where can we find it?
Yeah. So Piano Picnic is it's an online course. It's made up of videos and various downloads and backing tracks and demonstrations of the exercises that you're going to do. And it's also got some offline material, so you don't always have to be learning it online. And this is all kind of encompassed within a members area. I keep looking at the camera because I'm used to doing that for my lessons. within a members area. So you log in and you get all the materials and you have access to it all the time, for all of time.
Mm.
So it's kind of an, you get to do the courses in your own time, at your own pace.
Yep.
And the main thing that I think that sets my courses apart from, you know, everything else that's out there, is that I use a method, well, I employ a kind of a method of micro practice.
Okay.
Yeah. Or micro trainings, different words for it. But it's something that's used in a lot of, in some other industries, it's used in sports training, you know, and in sort of counseling and just all sorts of random industries. But as it pertains to piano, it's about learning in small chunks. So my video lessons are only 2 minutes long on average, which means you can just kind of, I've got a few spare minutes while I'm drinking my tea, which I forgot about, and just take a quick lesson rather than having to devote an hour to your piano lesson at a certain time each week. You can do it whenever you want. So I employ that, and also micro practice alongside that, meaning that, so that's micro training is the short videos, and the micro practice part is you're required to practice every day, but for a very small amount of time. So it's compounding interest, which is the way our brains work.
Yeah.
Building upon little on little.
Yeah.
Rather than a marathon session and then having a week off.
Yeah. Okay. And we're going to talk about why that is really important a bit later on.
So I do have to say, Piano Picnic, I just like waffling on and on about it. My website is pianopicnic.com, and the name is based on the fact that you snack on the lessons. So it's like a picnic, right?
Genius.
Yes, I know.
So go to pianopicnic.com if you want to learn piano. It is the place to do it. So how do we stay enthused and keep up our practicing? You touched on something that I would like to revisit. Earlier, about listening and finding a genre that you liked, perhaps getting some heroes.
Heroes are important.
Heroes.
Yeah. It's just kind of, when you start, sorry, dead air there, when you start playing the piano, hopefully, maybe there's already someone that you kind of want to play like, or some music that you like. If that's not there, you need to go searching for it. But the thing that I found throughout years and years of playing is that waxes and wanes. Like sometimes you obsess over an album, like I used to obsess over Tori Amos. And then you kind of get sick of that. And I think the important thing over in the long term is that when you do, when someone kind of sinks in importance for you, you go out and find someone new. So you've already got this, always got a rotation of people to idolize and emulate.
And get excited
because
about.
If you kind of get tired of someone and then just don't find someone else, then you're not going to be excited about playing anymore.
And so if you're finding a person, you're probably finding them within a certain genre. And I think it's important to connect with a genre as well. When I was younger, I connected with a few different ones, you know, punk and metal and hardcore, and I would find out who the drummers were in these bands that I liked. And then I would find out everything about that drummer, how they learned the drums, where they grew up, why they play the drums. And then I'd listen to everything they did and become obsessed with them almost. And that's how I progressed a lot in my drums and how I stayed on the right track. It was learning learning songs by these drummers, learning albums that I loved. And every time I would progress and get a little bit better at playing a certain album, my connection with it would deepen. And I think that that's a great way to stay motivated, you know, because you're becoming passionate about it.
And also, obsessing about those artists as well as being inspiring in itself, you'll connect with other musicians based on the obsessions that you formed early on. You know, like that, that band Brutus that we listen a lot to, you know, they formed out of a love for who was it? AFI?
Refused.
And they all knew the album.
Yeah.
And they were going to be a cover band for the album, but they formed this other band.
Yeah.
So it kind of also provides you with sort of a common ground with other musicians that you meet.
Yeah, totally. Gets you into the into a club.
Yeah.
Hey.
And join the club. Go on the forum.
Yeah.
Get obsessed.
Go to the shows and meet people and
buy the t-shirt.
buy the t-shirt. So there's isn't it kind of expanding on that a little bit? There's the kind of classic mantra that that applies to a lot of different sort of artists, but musicians especially. And we learned this at the same time in the same class, because we did our degree together. The three words are imitation, innovation, and invention. And those are the three stages that you go through as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
So two of them are attainable.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is almost unattainable for everyone. Mm. So do you want to give us a rundown of imitation?
Imitation, yeah.
Yeah, the first step.
So I kind of look as on imitation as being kind of two levels. So the kind of first level is, so you've got your idols, the musicians or the bands that you really love. You learn all their songs.
Mm.
And to me, that's the first level. You learn all their songs and how to not just, and that's not just like if you're, sorry to talk about specifically melodic instruments for a while, but not just the chords, you're learning the way that they play them.
Mm-hmm.
So like the riffs and everything.
Yeah.
And then kind of for the second stage is actually knowing enough of their songs and their riffs to actually know how they play. So the sort of...
their signatures, maybe.
Yeah, their signature riffs and the sort of thing they normally do. Mm. So someone could go, let's play Mary Had a Little Lamb in the style of Tori Amos, and you could do that because you'd studied how she played.
Yeah.
That's like a second level.
Yeah. And for anyone who hasn't heard Stevie Ray Vaughan's version of Mary Had a Little Lamb, go and check that out, because that's a perfect example. But he is more, in that song anyway, he is more an innovator. And so innovating is something, is progressing from imitation, isn't it? And it's taking something that's already known and putting your own spin on it,
mm-hmm.
right? And putting your own flavor, doing it in a slightly different way that's creative. And that's kind of where most musicians end up.
Yeah, and that's cool. Like even that in itself, I mean, it's sort of developing your own style based on like a mosaic of all these other musicians that you've learned how to play their styles, and you go, oh, I like that they do that, and I like that they do that. And you pull it all together and you come up with the Ruth Power style of piano playing.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Yep.
You know, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. I know it is. And invention is the last one.
My style is cool. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about yours.
My style's cool. Invention is the upper echelon. It's where very few people reach. It's always something to aim for, but inventing something entirely new is quite difficult, especially in music, which is not bound by, but you know, there are certain rules,
mm-hmm.
Which are made to be broken. But I think what I'm saying is it's very hard to create something totally, completely original.
Yeah.
And throughout kind of, let's say 50, 60, 70 years ago, as technology was kind of increasing in music, there were a lot of innovators because new things were happening.
Yeah.
Whereas now we're getting lots of technology, which is kind of a spin on old technology. So we haven't got so many inventors. Or I think I said innovators before. I mean inventors. Whereas now we're innovating more, and there are fewer inventors, I think, because we've reached almost a plateau.
Yeah. And I think that when you first hear that saying or method, I suppose, imitation, innovation, invention, the invention part, finding out that there's not really anything new to yeah. most of us,
yep.
can feel like really gutting. Mm. Like you're just like, oh, what's the point? We're just all regurgitating the same stuff. But it's not about that. And I think like once you kind of think about it, it's actually freeing.
Yeah.
Because there's this pressure off you to actually pull something completely out of the air, and very, very few people can do that.
Mm.
So that's kind of encouraging to know that even some of the best musicians that you'll know of are pulling things from other places and just
yeah.
changing, putting in their own spin. That's all yeah. it is. That's all it
is. I mean, who's inventing new stuff today? Who? Like, you know, no one.
Well,
probably someone, but as everyone that I listen to,
yeah.
Innovators. They're taking influences from everywhere, as you said, mm. And using it to create their own flavor. I like the mosaic kind of reference. So let's move on. Let's talk about actually practicing. I've got something that I call the 11 tips. I've got 11 of them.
11?
Yep, for easier practice.
That feels like value.
It's such value, Ruth. Oh my goodness. And it's okay, anyway, I'm going to talk about that later on, but these are my 11 tips
yeah.
for easier practice. So let's discuss these shortly. Quickly.
Okay.
Dedicating time is the first.
Yes.
Tip.
Need to block it out.
Yeah.
In your week, before the week starts.
Yep.
Or preferably for the month would be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, I mean, yeah, as far in advance as you want, but I would say the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely do a week in advance. And decide how much time you can spend and be realistic about it. Don't start the week and go, I'm going to spend 2 hours a day, and on Sunday I'm going to practice for 5 hours. Mm. Because you won't. No one will.
No, it's too much stuff on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. So just dedicate your time and be realistic. Second point is to psych yourself up.
Oh.
Yeah, get excited about it. But
yeah. Yeah.
How?
Well, it comes back to your idols.
Listening to music.
Right? Listening to music. Maybe maybe if you know that your practice is going to be at 6 p.m., you, at 5 p.m. on your way home from work, maybe listen to some piano music that you really love.
Yeah.
And remind yourself why you were practicing.
Yeah.
What the love is.
Yeah. Totally. So get psyched. Get excited about your practice before you have to do it. Next is to choose the correct environment for practicing.
Yeah.
Somewhere quiet is usually good.
Yeah.
Somewhere you're not getting, inconveniencing other people. This is something that I've got a lot of experience with as a drummer because I make a lot of noise.
I think there's a blend between not inconveniencing other people, because that impacts on you. You know, that's going to stress you out if someone else is getting annoyed with you.
Mm.
But also, there's got to be a tiny amount of, yeah, but this is what I do at 6 p.m. Get used to it.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Kind of just own it.
Yeah.
And also, you've got people, a mixture of people with stationary instruments and movable instruments.
Yeah.
So it's about where you set up your piano in the first place.
Mm.
You know, not everyone has a separate music room, which is fantastic if you have one. If you've got an acoustic piano and it's in your lounge, which is most commonplace for it, you just speak with the people in your house and just say, this is what I do at 6 p.m.
Mm.
Maybe you want to be somewhere else or...
Yeah. Yep.
Or if you've got a keyboard with headphones and you don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah, but choose somewhere where you're not going to be distracted, which is the next point, is removing distractions. So turn off your phone. This dog is being really distracting to me at the moment.
Really, he wants a feature.
It's just snoring and groaning and chewing on, licking your foot. Anyway, remove distractions. Get the dogs outside.
Yeah, just
put them out. Put them away for however long you need to practice for, because they're going to be annoying during your thing. Turn off your phone.
Yeah.
Get rid of your television.
Unless you're doing an online lesson.
Yeah.
Obviously, but there's ways of of turning off your notifications and that sort of business.
Mm.
But so why are you sniffing my outfit?
Okay.
Incorrigible.
You talk, I'm going to litter up.
Yeah, okay. So what was I just saying?
About how you can use your phone as well.
Yeah, so if you're doing an online lesson with your phone or with your tablet, you know, you can turn off, you can do turn on the do not disturb or whatever function so that you're not getting Facebook notifications and that sort of thing, because that will snap you out of it. And the thing about social media is it is designed to be addictive. It's designed to draw you out of whatever you're doing. That's the whole purpose of it. So you need to be really careful that you're not allowing it, you're not putting yourself in the position to be
distracted.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Now focus on why you're doing it, because practice can be really harsh.
Mm.
As we've talked about, visualize yourself succeeding. Visualize yourself. If your goal is to perform on stage, think about that and hold it in your mind while you're rehearsing.
Mm.
If it's perhaps to, you know, to put a video on YouTube and get some nice comments, imagine that happening.
Yeah.
While you're practicing or while you're trying to practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Visualization is a powerful tool. Even just, I mean, you don't have to sit down and do like a full meditation on it, but just remembering before you go into your practice, this is what I'm aiming for.
Yeah.
This is the, not necessarily the echelon, because it's good to have like closer goals that seem more achievable that your practice is actually working towards. Mm. Not I am going to be the next.
Yeah. Elton so even John. Even but, smaller
you
know, steps. So
smaller goals. You need the big goal. You're going to be the next Elton John, and then the smaller goals right. that you can actually tick off.
I'm going to play Rocket Man.
I'm going to play Rocket Man by Elton John.
Yeah.
And I'm going to play it in a month's time, which means this week I need to get the chorus sorted.
Mm.
That sort of stuff.
That sort of stuff. So that was a little plug for Elton there. Don't know why he needs it.
See.
Practice what you enjoy is the next point.
Yeah. So important. Well, yeah.
It is important, I think. Find you can find things that you enjoy that enhance your practice.
Yeah. But it comes back to that blend, because when you're working on something that's challenging, that's not always going to be fun.
Mm.
It's not all practice isn't always going to be fun, but you've got to have the fun in there.
Yeah.
Because if it's just practicing your weak points, and if you don't see progress in that within a short amount of time, and some things you work on, you won't see progress for a little while, then you're just going to give up, slump down on the piano, which I've done countless times.
Yeah.
The old piano slump.
Yeah. And you know when you aren't practicing and you're thinking about practice,
yeah.
you're going to think about it in a negative light, because I don't enjoy doing it. I don't really want to do that.
Yeah.
So it's important to work into your practice something
yeah.
that you do enjoy. And a way to do that, especially with the more tedious parts of practice, is by making it a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I recommend. Timing yourself, testing yourself, you know, can you play, how fast can you play all your scales?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, you know.
How slow can you play all your scales?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, totally.
Slowly and evenly, you know, that's the game.
Make it a game.
Yeah.
Now, divide your practice time. How would you approach a half-hour practice session?
Okay, so chunking is my favorite term for this.
Chunking.
Because it sounds a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
Reminds me of like vomit.
Okay, thanks for that.
But you'll remember it now. Chunking. Yeah, so you're dividing your practice up into bits, and each chunk is one of those small goals. So I guess each chunk is perhaps a challenge, something that you're finding challenging.
Mm.
So essentially you're working down from the big goals that you have. And at the start of the week, when you chunk out your time, what I recommend is when you plan out your practice time, is what I'm saying, you also are planning what is your goal for the month, for the week, and for each individual practice.
Okay.
And that's a lot of preparation.
Yep.
But it means that when you go into your practice, you're removing the decision element.
Okay.
You don't have to make any decisions. You're yep. just doing what you've already planned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's new chunking.
Okay. So to expand on that, I would make my chunks for a 30-minute session.
Mm.
I would dedicate a full half of it.
Yeah.
A full half chunk for yep. me would be playing something that I enjoy jamming.
Right.
Whereas, so I might spend 15 minutes doing that,
mm-hmm.
probably at the end of my practice, I would spend the first 5 minutes doing a warm-up,
mm-hmm.
and then I would spend a full 10 minutes working on technique,
yeah,
or any issues or whatever my goals are,
mm-hmm.
And then I would always yeah. dedicate half. That's me personally. Yeah, I'll put half of that time into jamming because that's my approach.
Yeah, you've just reminded me that's very similar to
yeah.
5 minute warm up.
Yeah.
15 minute working on your weak points.
Yeah.
And this is highly focused.
Yeah.
So if you're not going to focus, then you'll need longer. So for the micro practice to work, so about a 20 minute session, right?
Mm.
You need to know exactly what you're going in to do. But 5 minute warm up, 15 minutes on your lesson work or your weak points or whatever. And then I recommend the last 5 minutes, you is analysis.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're recording your practice, for instance,
which you should be,
you can watch it back or listen back and judge yourself how you did. And then that way you get the things you need to work on in the next practice.
Yeah.
And for me, I think that's your practice. Free time is after that.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, great. And so let's talk about the micro practice thing a little bit more. Listen and often is the idea behind it.
Little and often. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Little jingle? is that what comes up when you...
No, it doesn't. It's not an official thing. Should it be?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'll just sample that from you.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's what we love. That's the whole crux of micro training. Little and often, because, and I've done so much like research into it, a little bit geeky about it, because it mirrors the way that our brains work, is building little upon little.
Mm.
Every day our brain backs up what it is that we've absorbed of that day. And if you're doing a little bit each day, your brain's backing it up, backing it up, backing it up, back it up, back it up, back it up. You know, like a hard drive.
Yep.
And you're sort of gaining interest on that and it's building. When we do a massive marathon practice, we can, for one thing, injure ourselves.
Yeah.
If we're not used to playing for long, if we're not doing that every day and you practice for a long period of time, you get strain, particularly in your wrists if you're a pianist. And you can also sort of overwhelm yourself with too much information. And also the tendency is that when we do a really long practice, you think, the next day you're like, well, I did a massive one yesterday.
Yeah, so I don't want to do it for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, you just won't. And maybe it'll be a week before you, because you're like, I mean, I hit that piano for like 3 hours on Tuesday. So you don't. And it's nice if you're inspired to play for a long time. I definitely don't think that that's bad necessarily. But when it stops us from practicing every day.
Yep. That's when the issue happens.
Yeah.
So little and often. Micro practice, and that's what a big concept of the Piano Picnic piano course is about. So pianopicnic.com, learn piano through micro practicing.
Yeah.
And it's obviously the only way. Now, I've got two more points in my 11 and we're getting there. Always tapping. Now that it sounds like a drummer thing, and it is, but it does apply to all musicians. The principle behind it is that my first drum teacher, who I mentioned earlier, one of the first things he said, and probably the most important thing, was to never stop tapping. And it drives people mental, and I know it drives you nuts, because you have to live with it, but effectively it enables me to practice at any time, wherever I am. it used to drive my teachers at school mental because I'd just be sitting there tapping on the desk constantly. But man, as a drummer, it's so hard to practice.
Yeah.
You have to have a dedicated room. Mm. You know, people get annoyed. It's loud. It's, you know, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
So if you can keep practicing anywhere, then it's excellent. But this also applies to everyone playing any instrument.
Yeah.
Singers, you know, you can practice your technique on the tabletop if you're a pianist. You can warm up your vocal cords and practice your scales in the shower if you're a singer.
I mean, you know, I think singers, there's exercises you can do without needing to make sound.
There we go.
I remember seeing an interview with because I sing a little bit.
Yeah, we heard.
Oh, that was my tummy. It's hungry. Jessie J said that she does, before she goes on the stage, if she needs to warm up really quick, she does that kind of thing with her tongue.
Yeah.
Like tongue stretches.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's always something
there's always something you can be doing. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Okay, and last point of the 11 free tips. 11 tips. Don't skip. Don't skip your practices. And if you do have to skip, if grandma dies or something awful happens, you know, and I know I got deep real quick, but if you have to skip your practice, make it up. Because as soon as you get into the habit of skipping practices, you get used to missing practices,
mm-hmm.
and then it becomes normal to not practice.
It's not an option.
It's not an option. So don't make it an option. Mm. You should feel guilty if you're skipping practices, I think.
Yeah. And I suppose if you are skipping, you just have to look at what, you know, what the reason for that is.
Yeah.
If you're skipping because your life is very busy and you always have things coming up, maybe it's an issue of priorities and you need to take a look at that. Mm. Because your instrument will not be sidelined.
Not. Yeah, so you need to take a look at why you're skipping.
Why you're skipping. So yeah. is it just not a priority for you? Do you need to make it a priority, or do you just not care anymore?
Do you actually need want to find to be doing it?
More inspiration?
Yeah.
So that you can renew your vigor and want to be able to practice because you've still got that goal in mind. I would suggest that if you're skipping and it's not necessary and it could be helped, it's probably because you've lost sight of what your original reasons are.
Okay. And these 11 tips, you can actually download them. You can download a checklist that includes all of the 11 tips. It's absolutely free. It's over at the Musicians Map website, musiciansmap.org/practice-tips-checklist.
Yes.
There'll be a link somewhere on this video or in the text of the podcast where you can download that for free. So that is the podcast for this week. Thank you to my guest, Ruth Power from Piano Picnic.
No problem.
Thank you for listening and watching on YouTube. Hit us up.
And that's the podcast for this week. Thank you so much to my guest Ruth Power of Piano Picnic, and thank you for listening and or watching on YouTube. The band of the week this week was mentioned by Ruth earlier. It's Brutus, whose album Burst is out now and is seriously good, so check them out at wearebrutus.com. The Musicians Map podcast is part of the Musicians Map website, musiciansmap.org, where you can find lots more articles and videos, as well as my ebook and audiobook about growing success in music. In that book, you'll find experienced-based advice about every aspect of learning music, from listening and learning an instrument to recording, gigging, touring, and making money as a musician. For those of you wanting to get serious about your musical journey, I offer one-on-one development sessions and song critiques, which are honestly an incredible way to gain the focus and direction required to achieve your goals, whatever they might be. I've also got a free 5-day challenge to a clear musical pathway. In the 5-day challenge, you will learn how to define your taste and clear your path, how to expand your horizons and exploit your musical potential, how to become a better musician just by listening, how to discover your niche and make it work for you, and how to set achievable goals and actually follow through. And it's totally free. So once again, head to musiciansmap.org to take advantage of all of the resources on offer. And don't forget to get your free 11 tips for easier practice checklist over at the Musicians Map website at musiciansmap.org/practice-tips-checklist. So thanks again for listening, and thanks again to Ruth for giving her time and expertise to the podcast. Make sure to check out Piano Picnic. Also, please get in touch with your comments, suggestions, and let me know what challenges you are facing at the moment over at the Musicians Map Facebook group. I always respond. Stay positive.